Good to go. There we are. Hey, good morning, everybody. I think the last time that I was here was about 2 years ago, because I think Pascal was in the Royal Alec, about 20 hours old, and Jocelyn was there. I think I remember that. I still had my like my medical bracelet on and stuff. That was funny. So yeah, now he's 2 years old, obviously, and he's doing well. He's got a few scratches on his face, but nothing a boy can't handle. And Ruth's doing good, too. She'll be 4 in a few weeks. Right, Ruth? So they'll join us up here. They might run around. Don't let them distract you. They're being kids. So you guys know us pretty well. We're Nick and Jocelyn Fry. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm from Ontario. And that's where I was born and raised. I lived there for 20 years. And then I moved out to Alberta because that's where all the jobs were. So I was a pilot, and I came here to fly, and originally I was flying for Peace Air up in Peace River. Then when they went under, I moved to Edmonton and was flying for a charter company there. And it was through flying for that charter company, I was with a former MAF pilot, his name was Garrett Vermeer, and he was telling me about Mission Aviation Fellowship and how missionaries can be pilots and pilots can be missionaries, and I thought that'd be pretty cool. So I went to Bible College, had a great time there. It was a cool presentation this morning on Bible College. It was blown away at how awesome, how much I... And then I needed some more captain time. I was a co-pilot for most of my career. So I came back and flew skydivers just down the road at Westlock Airport here with Edmonton Skydive. And that's how I came to Westlock. And then because I was working most weekends, I was looking for a church that I could attend or something that I could do during the week. So I found the Wednesday morning prayer group and got to know a lot of the fellow Wednesday morning prayer warriors.
So Nick and I met at Edmonton Skydive out here at Westlock, and our first conversation went along the lines of, just so you know, I'm going to be single for the rest of my life. And I said, good luck with that, Nick. And 3 months later, he decided that he could get married and that person could be me. And we started fundraising together unengaged, and we got engaged, and then June 12th, 2010, we got married and finished fundraising. I went a little back, but I grew up in Grand Prairie, so a little bit north of here. I'm sure you guys know lots about MAF. There's a bit of a Rob Taylor history in this church, from what I understand, and a bit of a legend in Congo. But for those that don't know, MAF started in 1946 with a bunch of World War II pilots that had gained their pilot's licenses and wanted to use it to glorify God. And they saw these missionaries that were out in the middle of the nowhere that were taking weeks and months to be able to get to places by walking, by boats. And they were like, well, you know, we can just cut a small airstrip in here and we can take minutes or hours instead of weeks or months to be able to get to places. So in 1946, it was a lady named Betty Green, who was a Canadian lady that did MAF's first flight. And then in the picture here is sort of what... in a tragedy that really put MAF on the map was Nate Saint and the missionaries that were martyred in Ecuador.
So MAF has been in Congo, where we live, for over 55 years, since January 1961, just after the country became a country, got independence in 1960. So the mission in Congo, our ministry with MAF, has gone up and down, kind of as the country's history goes up and down. There's been lots of civil war and strife and evacuations. And so we've had as few as one airplane and one pilot there, and as many as 9 bases and 25 airplanes and a whole slew of families. So it kind of goes up and down with the country. The country was improving in infrastructure and things. There was a time in the 80s when we started to train Congolese pilots, and we thought, hey, maybe this is the time when MAF can start backing away. But then through corruption and misguidance and misleadership, the country kind of fell back down, and roads were not being worked on. And so it's actually worse now in the 2000s and 2010 and the teens than it was in the 80s. And some of the missionaries we have can see that decline because they've been with MAF there for 25 and 30 years, and they've seen it go down and the need for MAF go up. So we have three bases right now in Kinshasa in the one corner. That's where we live. It's a city of about 12 million people. Jocelyn will talk a bit more about that later. And then another base in Bunia and Yankunde. A lot of the houses in Yankunde were the ones that Rob Taylor built. And then he's also built the one in Lubumbashi, where we have a base there as well. And in total, we have 8 airplanes and about 18 missionary families, the most amount of missionaries with one mission or one group in all of Congo. A lot of the missionaries have fled during the 90s and during the rebellions. And so there's like Baptists and different groups that have maybe 4 or 5 missionaries. So we have the most. So that gives you about a general idea of our operations there.
So to go back a little bit in the history of Congo, it was colonized in the early 1900s, but not necessarily by Belgium itself. When Congo was colonized, it was colonized personally by the King of Belgium. And he sort of told the story to the rest of Belgium that it was sort of a humanitarian operation. But what he was actually doing is that bikes had just been invented, and there was lots of resources in Congo, as there are today. He was just sort of exploiting all the rubber and different resources within the country. And within 10 years of him owning the Congo, he had halved the population. Once Belgium found out what he was doing, they took the country away from him. But really, since the early 1900s, it's just been a continuation of other people coming in, exploiting the country, and then civil war after civil war. Even today in the East, there's a big influence of all of the Rwandan, when the Rwandan genocide happened, a lot of the refugees and a lot of the rebel groups came into Congo, and a lot of those rebel groups are still active today. Where we live in Kinshasa, we mostly deal with political corruption, because when you get elected, everyone has to move to Kinshasa, which is hard then to represent your area if you have to live in Kinshasa. But our day-to-day is all the political corruption, not necessarily a lot of the physical harm or threat of physical that they deal with in the East. But so MAF's mission statement is to help physically and spiritually transform isolated people using aviation and technology. And so, I mean, like Nick said, MAF has been there for over 50 years, and we will continue to be there to help for transformation and hope for this country that sometimes really has a lot of hopelessness.
So, like we said this morning, part of how we do that is by flying airplanes. So part of my job is as a pilot. Ever since we've been there, it's been almost 5 years. In September, it'll have been 5 years that we've been in Congo, so it's gone by really fast. And we're flying things from like sacks of rice and corn. I was telling the kids the other day that we put goats in the airplane in our Cessna Caravan, or chickens. Whatever has to be taken from the city out to the village or from the village back into the city. So lots of things, pastors, NGO and humanitarian aid workers. We work with groups like World Vision and Doctors Without Borders and many of the mission groups, Evangelical Free Church, Mennonites, MCC, all the mission groups, and anybody who needs to get anywhere remote in the third world, especially in Congo, uses MAF. I think we got some more airplane shots here. So yeah, that's kind of what I look like when I dress up in my pilot garb, and it's always hot, so I wish we could wear shorts, but we always wear pants. It's kind of culturally appropriate. And the one nice thing about not being cold and having snow is that there's no icing that we have to deal with in the plane, so we just have to worry about wiping the sweat off and keeping that out of our eyes to be able to see while we're going. Maybe I'll just tell you one story that I remember that was pretty significant for me, was actually being able to spend the whole weekend out at an airstrip, and it was flying with a missionary family called the Grings. And their grandfather came over on a boat, and the boat got shipwrecked. I mean, it was straight out of like a story of the Bible with Paul. They lost all their stuff, and he decided to keep going on to be a missionary in Congo. So, you know, this was 80 years ago or something like that. So he went into a village called Ipope and built a house and started a mission station. It was very simple. It didn't have hospitals and schools and all kinds of things. It was just a small community, and he brought many of the people to the Lord, and they became pastors and leaders. Then his son continued it on, and his grandson is who I got to fly out there and spend the weekend with. and he wanted to go visit the place that he grew up and the house that he grew up in. And then he brought his son along also. So there was like four generations of missionaries that went out to visit the village. And this was a shot of the kids coming out to visit us. There was just thousands of kids that came out. I think every single person in the village came out to see their brother, because this missionary had grown up among them. He spoke their language, their little tribal language, perfectly. And so they really embraced him like one of their own. So we spent the weekend there. We got there on a Friday. We showed the Jesus film Friday night. And then Saturday, they ran a bunch of different seminars and sessions. And then Saturday night, we watched the Courageous film in French. French is the official language in Congo. So that's what I speak. I speak that with our kids, too. And I know hints and how to say hello and greetings in some of the tribal languages where we fly. But I leave that up to the real experts. Then Sunday we had church and had a big meal, and they sent us off. And it was just a really great opportunity to hang out with them for the whole weekend instead of just flying in, dropping stuff off, loading stuff up, and heading out. And I made relationships there with some of the local village leaders and church leaders. And now every time I go in, I can say, hey, how's it going, Pastor Roger? And it's really great. Another thing we do is IT work. So you see on your left side there is Randy, our IT manager. And I was dabbling in that a little bit when I first got out there, until I transitioned to the role of program manager 2 years ago. So we do cool things like bring internet into the middle of nowhere. One village we fly to is called Kikongo, and it's been a mission station for 100 years. They just celebrated their 100 years. It has a Bible seminary there, and the missionaries teach in the seminary, and they train rural pastors, which is really great, because lots of the pastors, once they become a pastor and get ordained, they'll just go to the city and start a church because that's where more money is. They can live an easier life. So this specific Bible college trains rural pastors so that they can stay out in the rural places and learn how to fish and farm and work in the community in the village, and then also pastor a church. And so we installed a VSAT there a few years ago, and this is a place that has no cell phones and no roads going to it. If you want to get from there to Kinshasa, it takes 12 hours by boat and motorcycle and car, or you can get there in an airplane in 55 minutes. So with them having internet was a really huge deal for them. They finally had a connection with the outside world, and now they can go online and have Skype video conference calls with Bible theologians in Kinshasa or even in the United States, and they can have classes taught from them by experts who don't have to fly all the way to Kinshasa and Kikongo and be with them. And then we have wireless networks that we beam around in line of sight to be able to share internet with each other, with other missionaries in Kinshasa and other hospital centers, and it's really cool. Another thing, other than the VSATs, is called a Connect Box, and it's really new. It's just a few months old. It's about the size of your cell phone, and it just sends out a wireless signal. So you can put it in a public place or in an airplane or in a church, and it just sends off a Wi-Fi signal, and everybody and their brother and their cousin has two or three or four cell phones in Congo and most of Africa. They carry one around on this side and one on this side, and then this one has two SIMs so that they can be with, you know, Bell and Telus and AT&T. So cell phones are really huge, and so we've found a way to tap into that to share God's message. And they'll be walking around looking for a free Wi-Fi signal to connect, and they'll see this thing pop up that says free Bible resources, you know, in French or Lingala. And they can connect to that, and then it opens up a web page, and then from there they can download the Jesus film in their own language or Bible resources. There's about 4 gigs of information that we have on there in French and Lingala and Swahili that they can download straight to their phone as they're walking by, and they don't even know where they got it from. So... Or we'll put a sign that says where it came from. But it's cool in closed countries where MAF has to go in under a different name. And like I told the kids at the Iwana camp, we go in as spy missionaries, kind of, because we can't say that we're Christians in some countries where we are. This thing works really great. They actually put it in like a McDonald's cup and seal it off, and then they can just leave it in a shopping mall or something, and Christians can be downloading stuff as they walk through.
So when Nick is flying and doing his sort of thing, the kids and I spend most of our time in Kinshasa. And we told the kids yesterday, but can anybody guess how many people live in Kinshasa? A million? Not quite. Anybody else? Throw out a number. 12 million people. You are correct. You listened yesterday. So Kinshasa, where we live in, is a city of 12 million people. So it is 12 times the size of Edmonton. though not necessarily 12 times the size of land mass. As you can see at the top left up there, that's downtown Kinshasa. So there are some very modern amenities that we have. There's some South African grocery stores. And you could buy anything in Kinshasa if you want money. I can buy about 13 strawberries for $26 if I really, really want to. I, however, don't spend my money on that. I just sort of gorge on strawberries when we come home. But most of Kinshasa looks like the bottom two pictures. It's about a 9 million person shantytown. There's a huge urbanization rate within Congo. They move to the cities in hope that there's work. However, in Kinshasa and most of Congo, there's a 70% unemployment rate. So it's an interesting city to live in. It's a difficult city to live in. Probably one of the most dangerous things that we do is drive. You get your driver's license by paying somebody $50. So everybody gets their driver's license by paying somebody $50. So there's lots of traffic jams. There's, lots of police corruptions. They sort of see a white face and can you grab them? And they'll pull you over and say you did something wrong and tell you that you owe them $300 and then you negotiate down to a bottle of water and a bag of peanuts or something like that. So life in Kinshasa can be really stressful, but what we try to do within our own house is try to make our, at least life at home as peaceful as possible. So we have a few chickens running around the house. We have a cat that Pascal loves and loves and loves and loves. And Ruth started going to school this year at a Belgian school in French. At the top right there is her class with her teacher, Madame Isabelle. And Ruth is a very helpful little girl. As you can see, she's blowing out somebody else's birthday candles at the top left up there.
So the other part of my role since the last 2 years is being program manager. So that's overseeing all of our operations, all the airplanes, and safety is becoming a bigger and bigger bureaucratic and administrative workload, even though we're just as safe as we've always been. And we need different titles and roles and manuals that we have to follow. And then, like Jocelyn said, interacting with the taxes that we have to pay. We are an NGO, a humanitarian group registered under the Protestant Church there, but they still come after us. They see airplanes as shiny things that are really expensive and think we have lots of money. So we're interacting with government officials on a daily basis, and then overseeing our national staff too. We have about 50 Congolese national staff in the country, and they're doing everything from finances to flight following to fueling airplanes. Maya here, the guy in the top right, is handing out a Bible to some customs and immigration officers. So it's really great that all of our staff are actually Christians as well. And they hear the message. They know that we gave up a lot to come and live in their country. And so they look for ways that they can sacrifice and share the gospel during their daily work too. On the bottom right there is Mama Jose Ibaya. She's been with MAF longer than we've been alive. She's worked there since the 70s and stuff. So she knows MAF really well. She's a flight follower, and if you ever want to come and book a flight with us, then you'll probably talk to her. Another thing I do is go to a lot of meetings, World Food Program meetings or health meetings. Like when we had the Ebola outbreak, I attended a few meetings with the Minister of Health, and we had to transport blood samples that may contain Ebola, bring them back to Kinshasa, and they could do testing and things like that. And a lot of the other airlines and air operators didn't want to transport those possible Ebola-containing vials, even though they were packaged inside a three boxes with saran wrap around it, inside another cardboard box, and wrapped all around it with biohazard stickers all around. So I was chatting with the Minister of Health, and he said, "So who are you?" I said, "Well, I'm with MAF." "Oh, yeah, I know you guys really well." And I said, "Hey, if you need us to do anything, we're here." He's like, "No, I can always count on MAF." So really cool stuff, cool meetings that I get to go in and represent MAF. And then also with the church group on the left there, that was me presenting MAF to the Protestant Church umbrella group. It's called the Église du Christ au Congo, or the Church of Christ in Congo. And so we were getting together with Wycliffe Associates and SIL and some other guys, JARS, to talk about Bible translation in the Congo. There's about 400 tribal languages, and they wanted to figure out how we're going to do this. So this is the local church, their presidents, their vice presidents, and we just come alongside and tell them how we can be of assistance and see how we can tackle this together as one big group. And I guess I could say it's all about relationships in Africa. So, you know, you get up and you're going to do your day and you maybe have a bunch of meetings planned and some reports to finish. And then someone comes in and you have to sit down and have tea for 3 or 4 hours and you never plan on it happening that day. But it is really important. One time a guy came into my office and he was wanting to collect tax on some of the VSATs that we own. And so we were talking back and forth, and it was going to be $3,000 or something like that. And then I kind of sidetracked the conversation. I just said, "So where are you from?" And he said, "Oh, I'm from a village. And there's no way you've heard of it. It's a small little village out in the middle of Congo." And I said, "Well, give me a try." So he said, "It's called Monkoto." I said, "Oh, I've spent the night there." And he said, "No, there's no way you've spent the night in my village." I said, "Sure I have." I said, "The honey is really good there. Last time I was there, I bought a liter of honey. And the man, that was good stuff." He's like, "Yeah, it is." I said, "I even have a coffee plant that I took from there because the coffee was so good that I brought a plant home and I planted it in my yard in Kinshasa." And he's like, "No, now you're lying." I said, "No, I spent the night there and there was a guy there whose name, I think it was like Roberto or something like that." And he goes, "That's my brother," which in Africa doesn't necessarily mean my blood brother, but somebody really close. So he got out his phone and he called his African brother. And the guy picked up the phone and he said, "Hey, do you know Pilote Nicolas? He's telling me he's been to our village in Monkoto." And he's like, "Oh yeah, he was here last week. I know him. I see him every time he comes in." So, you know, the relationship worked really well. I ended up putting a bunch of pictures of his village that I had taken on a CD and gave them to him. And he left my office and I said, "Are we friends now?" And he said, "Now we're very good friends." And didn't have to pay anything, so... So God can do great things.
First of all, I just want to say a huge thank you. This is our team in Kinshasa. We serve with seven families in Kinshasa that we serve with. And I just want to thank you so much because this church here is really close to our hearts, especially because we met here. But we just know that there's so many of you here that read our newsletters and pray for us. And we just have to say that if it wasn't for your prayers specifically, that we wouldn't be in Congo. As you hear from a couple of Nick's stories and from this morning, it's not the easiest place to live, but it's somewhere where we really feel like God has called us for right now. And so we just want to say thank you so much and thank you from our whole team in Kinshasa and also all of Congo. So now we've told you all sorts of stories. We have a video, right? We have a video. We just have a little video to give you a little bit of an extra visual of what life is like in Congo. So thank you so much. Oh, and we have a table in the back with some prayer cards and airplane pens and things like that if you want to come back and visit us more after the service.